Hi, welcome to the Sprocket Podcast. This is episode 6. We are recording on the Monday before Christmas. And we are simplifying the good life. My name is Brock Dittus.
And I'm Brandon Rhodes. And we are broadcasting from the People's Republic of Cascadia.
The People's Republic of Portland.
I got so excited.
It's okay.
I always get
it's a great
excited
place.
At the beginning.
Everyone's moving here.
Let's try that again. So we're broadcasting. From the People's Republic of Portland.
That's right.
That's it. Oh, it, you know what? We are nestled in the heart of Cascadia.
That's correct. Right. Yeah. They're making a TV show about us.
It's true.
So excited.
It's the dream of the 90s.
It's still alive. So we're the show that brings you somewhat irreverent conversations about the intricacies of thinking locally with a global perspective and enjoying the best that life has to offer along the way.
Covering day-to-day life, food, alcohol, bicycles, alternative transportation, arts, sculpture, communication, internet, and variegated what have yous.
There we go. So, glad to have you with us. Thank you for joining us. Thanks for coming by. And tonight we are extremely fortunate to be in the presence of Mr. Scott Prose.
Well, thank you.
Thanks for joining us here. And Scott, I met you through Brandon. Brandon, you guys have probably known each other probably longer than I have known you, Scott.
That's right. I met Scott, I think, back spring or summer of 2006. We were tearing down some stuff after a church thing, and he suggested we should all go ice blocking.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Which is basically summertime sledding.
Right. It works like you have a block of ice.
Yes.
And you cover it in a towel? Is that how
I heard
right?
Top of it, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So you have something to sit on.
And then
from there you sledge down the hill on a block of ice?
Yeah. Well, the place that we first went to, they actually put a sign up saying that we no ice blocking. It's the only sign I've ever seen that has the word ice blocking on it.
Yeah.
So I don't know if it's from us or not, but...
They mean business then.
I'm proud of it. Yeah. I'm proud of it.
And that's pretty fantastic.
Yeah.
So that you've almost kind of indirectly made history. Like, your name is not there on the sign, but the sign is there because of you.
Yeah. I kind of feel like a rebel, though. I mean,
yeah.
It's like no graffiti sign. Like,
yeah. But we were the only ones graffitiing, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
It's like...
Well, we're glad to have you here, you're a simplifier extraordinaire, as I understand, so that's kind of the direction we're going in the second half of the show, isn't that right?
Yeah, we'll be diving into the topic later on.
All right. Fantastic. Well, without further ado, it's time to introduce our drinks and talk about the fine beverages we'll be enjoying tonight.
That's right. Brock, what are you going to be drinking?
Well, I have, let's see here, I haven't even looked at it yet. It was given to me by you, Brandon, so thank you so much. I was down on my luck, so to speak.
And, that's in a glass bottle.
It is in a glass bottle. It works out nicely.
You never drink out of glass bottles.
First time you haven't heard, like, the little aluminum can popping open. This is the Bridgeport Ebenezer Ale, and it's something I've had before, but Bridgeport Brewing Company, they're a fine establishment based here in Portland. They were in the Pearl before the Pearl was paved. So I'm a big fan of them. They do a good job. So,
and it's the which one of theirs is it?
The Ebenezer Ale.
That's good.
Yeah,
that's good.
Yeah, it's got him looking somewhat curmudgeonly on the front,
Just
peering over his spectacles at you. So,
great.
Yeah. What do you have?
Well, I have a 2010 Glenwood Park Holiday Cider.
Yes,
gifted to us by wonderful neighbors Mick and Mark Parrish.
Yeah, and Mark, I believe Mark, you've left a comment on the Facebook wall, so we thank you for your electronic connection and contribution to us, as well as being a good neighbor and a good friend, and for giving us free booze that you made yourself.
It's awesome.
So
that's awesome.
Many props to Mark, and
indeed.
There we go.
And Scott and I will be splitting a bottle of their generously gifted
there we go.
Cider.
And I actually had some of that the night before. We popped it open. We couldn't wait, so we gave it a shot ourselves and tried it out.
Watched a zombie movie and had cider. That sounds like
that's
the best
right.
night ever.
Yeah. That there's life really doesn't get any much better than that.
No.
So yeah. So well, we should probably open them up while we're preparing our drinks and whatnot. I will.
There we are.
Thank you. I'm borrowing the church key now to uncharacteristically peel a cap off of the top of a bottle.
So out of sorts for you, Brock.
It's weird. So, yeah, I'll take a sip here real quick. while you masterfully pour that into a glass passed across the room to Scott. And we'll move on. I did mention the Facebook page. We've got one of those. You can find us there if you'd like. We're also in the iTunes store, which is really exciting. So if you'd like to subscribe, you can find us there. Search us out, and it'll slide the new episodes down a long tube right into your computer, exactly where you want to find
them. It's magic.
That's it, yeah. There's listener input, and by the way, Abe, we're thinking of you down in San Diego. We're still going to look for the dogfish, but the Bitches Brew is possibly a seasonal, you were saying, Brennan?
I think it's a seasonal. I've looked around for I've seen quite a few dogfish, but no Bitches Brew.
Yeah. Well, we'll keep our eyes out, but Abe, if you have a quicker connection to the Bitches Brew than we do, you can, if you know what I mean, you can send it to us. So, anyways, I just want to let you know we're thinking about you. Thank you so much for suggesting it. You can suggest beers, drinks, anything you'd like to hear us talk about by writing to us at thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com. You can also leave us a voicemail at 503-847-9774. 503-847-9774. So now, without further ado, we've got some things from BikePortland.org. Jonathan Moss, thank you very much, sir, for giving us access to your web news source and all things of a biking nature. So there's a couple things to talk about. The first thing, actually, it showed up on the Bike Portland Roundup. And I'm adjusting my bottle here to make sure it doesn't fall on the many electronic things around me. There was a thing, a cycling yellow card that someone actually found on a website and sent to me. Have you heard about that?
Yeah, I saw it.
You guys know about this already.
Yeah, on Gizmodo, it's awesome.
Yeah,
so, I feel it's a great way to release the aggression that you often
seriously.
Do. It's good passive aggressive. Mischief.
Yeah. Well, maybe for anybody who hasn't heard it, let me check it out. There's let's see here. The yellow card is a magnetic sticker, for lack of a better. It's just a magnet with a sticker on it, I guess. You can make these yourself. And it's a big yellow placard that says, "This magnet was tossed onto your car by a cyclist who felt that you might have been driving in a way that could have endangered their life. They chose to toss this magnetic note because it can neither damage your automobile nor affix itself to rubber or glass, like a sticker would, and will therefore not affect your driving. It serves to warn you. With thoughtful contemplation and reverence for humanity, we can adjust our behavior to allow for all people to live life. This is a yellow card. Let's please not let things get to red." So, if you're frustrated by things that happen in traffic and you don't want to be the guy that smacks the car on the side with your hand or gets into a confrontation or another kind of unpleasant situation, that's one way to do it. So,
would you use one if you had it?
I don't know. That's the thing. Because I guess you have to get it on there somehow. And the only thing I can imagine is if, like, you reach out with your arm and you're just, like, smacking it onto the car.
Or you could flick it like a card, right?
Yeah, but you'd have to have it prepared when you're riding around. That's
right.
Like, have it in your basket or something.
Yeah, I feel like you would wreck trying to get it out of your bag.
Seriously.
Trying to toss it. Yeah. And I don't know.
Back here, you asshole.
That's
hang on.
The thing. Yeah, by the time you catch up to the offending vehicle, there's maybe, I don't know, maybe it would be difficult. But
yeah.
I guess maybe the only thing, the little thing at the end that says, "Let's please not let things get to red."
Is that a veiled threat?
It's not. It sounds like a veiled threat. I don't think that's the
red,
intention.
I think we have to know what red is.
A brick. So if it's a brick.
A brick. Yeah.
That will break through the glass.
So that's the only thing. Like, I really like the idea. It's kind of like a long time ago, I used to read Adbusters magazine, and I really want a subscription again. So if anybody out there is listening and they want to get me a Christmas present, Adbusters would be awesome. But I was reading there, and they had these fake parking tickets that... They looked like a real parking ticket, but you'd slide them underneath the windshield wiper of any automobile that you cared to do so. And they would tell you all the egregious errors you had committed against humanity and against the world and the environment by driving. So something like that. It was just kind of a passive way to share your distaste for the automobile. So, yeah, I like the independent spirit of it. I like the idea that these are things that you're making them yourself. So there's not a whole lot of... besides the magnet industry, maybe, there's not a whole lot of commercial interest in this. It's just kind of a, you're doing what you can to spread your message. So
it reminds me of the old, the comedian Gallagher. He had the idea of stupid stickers.
Yeah.
Where you could just, you had like a dart gun or something like that. You could shoot stupid stickers. And if you get three stupid stickers, you lose your license. Like, if three people thought you were enough of an idiot on the road, hasta luego.
Hasta, yeah. Luego. Hasta tomorrow, right? Or later. Anyways, that
ciao.
I kind of wish I had some of those.
Yeah, stupid stickers. Yeah.
Well,
it'd be really hard to get one to stick to a bicycle, so we'd probably be fine.
That's right. All right. Next story. There's a guy in Queens who dropped 30 pounds by changing his commute. A Queens man dropped 30 pounds in less than a year by hopping off the train and onto a bike. Marcus Woolen, 36, abandoned his 40-minute commute on the E train in favor of riding a bicycle from Jackson Heights to his office in Midtown. By midsummer, he says, the weight was falling off and I had to buy new pants. I don't have to worry about watching what I eat anymore. And I've been in a serious season myself of just letting things go. You know, it's the holidays and there's lots of food around.
Mm.
And you're biking it off. So
and you're drinking great cider.
That's right.
It's good, huh?
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
The man says, I realized I had a bike lane nearby that went right to my office that I could use to replace my daily commute on the subway. Now I have a commute that takes the same amount of time, and I get an hour and a half of exercise. It was a perfect solution. I couldn't figure out how to make a gym work with my schedule. I was spending money on a gym I never used. So here's a guy. They've got before and after pictures. There's a picture of him on the subway looking somewhat rotund. And then a picture with his bicycle, I think probably in his office. And he looks trim and thin. So
he looks like 100 pounds thinner.
He really does. I mean, there's a marked improvement in the before and after photos. And we'll put links up to the story so you can check it out. This is a, New York Daily News story. So we'll put that up on the website, which is thesprocket.podbean.com. That's a good thing. I would say, Brandon, you've never been in a position to lose any weight. So how do you... You've been rail thin ever since I've met you. So how do you deal with the added maybe energy needs?
Oh, I mean, I honestly do find that I gain a little bit of weight over the winter when I'm biking less.
Okay.
But I mean, 5 pounds. But like, it's seriously like a matter of 2 or 3 days of regular riding, and it's back. It's gone.
Right.
You know.
Right.
And
5 pounds is like 25% of your total body weight.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm the size of a sheepdog, evidently.
Indeed.
How do I maintain the extra energy?
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I probably have more sugar than I should in my diet, but I used to, if I'm really just running around a lot, those little emergency packets are handy.
Oh, right, and, right.
You know, you just accept the fact that you're going to be eating a lot more.
There we go. Yeah.
And, which is fine, you know, like, I love being able to brag to customers at my store about how, like, you know what? I don't have to worry about the gym.
That's right.
I don't have to worry about paying those memberships. I don't have to worry about my car breaking down. I don't have to be very uptight about what I eat. I'm going to be more careful about getting ingredients that nobody should be eating, things like cottonseed oil or hydrogenated oil or, you know, that sort of creepy stuff. Everybody should make sure they're working. You know, they're worried about that. But
yeah.
I don't have to look at fat and calorie and all that sort of stuff as much. Like, it's less responsibility because I'm just staying svelte on the bike.
That you are. Mm. And your lady, I'm sure, is probably the better for it.
Well.
All right, well, next story. The USA Today had an article about walkable communities. And they said, let's see here. First of all, they have happier people. Researchers scored 700 residents of 3 communities in New Hampshire on measures of social capital, such as socializing with friends, civic engagement, and trust in their community. They found that those in neighborhoods with a higher walk score rating report being happier and healthier and more apt to volunteer, work on community projects, or simply entertain friends at home. So, short story, but a lot of good in there, I would think.
I can attest to that, Brock. I looked my walking score up the other day. I have a 98. Which I'm very proud
really?
Of.
Really?
That's incredible.
Yeah.
So we're here in Portland, Oregon. What part do you live in, Scott?
I live on Clinton Street, so
okay.
Clinton District. So, yeah, with New Seasons grocery store, quite good grocery stores right next to my house.
That's right.
I think, I'm not sure exactly what makes up the score, but I think a lot of it is just accessibility to basic needs.
Well, it's not going to take you like 45 minutes to walk to a place just to buy like food or something. Like you can do that.
No, everything I need, I mean, it may be a little more costly, but it is all readily available to me.
Yeah. So. And you're going to do it without fighting like high speed traffic and that sort of thing.
Yeah. I mean, you can do it all walking. That's the beauty of it.
That's a good feeling. I remember my parents came down to visit me here in our neighborhood in Lower Lentz, just right on the line at the very, very bottom of Portland. And I mean that in every way possible. But they came down, and my dad, he's a he's a not a city guy. He grew up on a farm, and he came down kind of to visit me in the big city from the suburbs. But when he was here, he said something to the effect of, as we were walking to the park, how there was like no traffic. And we were out maybe like 8 o'clock at night or something like that. But we're walking through our neighborhood, and we're right next to the freeway here. The 205 goes right down. It's the interstate. And it's fairly noisy, but our own neighborhood was really insulated, and we walked over to the park, and we didn't see one car on the way there. And he commented, like, there's no traffic, which was all right. I felt good about that.
It's a compliment to the
neighborhood. Yeah, it was. Yeah. So, anyways, walkable neighborhoods, good things. Find a link to that story as well. All right. Last thing I've got here is Mini Bike Winter. And have you guys heard about this before?
No.
Mini Bike Winter. There's a picture right here. From the Bike Portland website about the mini chariot wars that they're doing, where you've got little kids' bikes, BMXs, and that sort of thing that have been tricked out and turned into crazy cycling machines. And then you've got bike trailers that have been converted to hold people, or maybe even things that aren't bike trailers converted into chariots. So basically you've got people going around and waging full-on gladiatorial war with each other via mini bike, via just little kids' bikes. So it's kind of part and parcel, I think, with the zoo bombing trend and fad, and probably a lot of the same people that do that every Sunday night are also involved in Mini Bike Winter. So if you're interested, you got freak bikes, you got strange bikes, small bikes, big and small. You've just got a regular bike, but you like seeing crazy junk happen out on the street. it's going to happen. So let's see. I got to find the dates here. February of this coming 2011, February 17th to 21st. So it goes, it's kind of a long 4 to 5 day weekend from the end of one week into the beginning of another, and there's going to be all kinds of bikey events. So that's something I would definitely recommend checking out. Matter of fact, I might try and get down there with a little press hat, you know, a little card in the fedora, and try and do some interviews with some folks. So
the dream of the 90s will be alive and well.
You'll get in with your good looks, Brad.
Thank you, sir. I've been grooming them all my life just for Mini Bike Winter 2011. So, if you're anywhere near the Portland area and you're interested in seeing some crazy shit happen on the streets, that's a good place to do it. So, we're coming up on 20 minutes here, so we're gonna break, and we got a music from it's somebody you know, right, Brennan?
That's right.
It's the song is called Prelude. The band is Galaxy Farm, and they have a self-titled EP out. You can find them on the internet at myspace.com/galaxyfarm, and I'm sure you said they're in the studio right now, right?
That's right. They just put down, I believe, they're aiming for 15 tracks.
Okay, that's a healthy
album. They're going to trim it down to hopefully 11 or 12.
I was gonna say after they switch to bicycle commuting.
Exactly.
So, all right, here we go, Galaxy Farm, and we'll be back in just a minute.
Well, but I know longer mine.
Alright, and we're back. Thanks to Galaxy Farm for letting us play their song.
Yeah, I imagine they're probably awesome to see live.
They are incredible to see live. I've seen them play several locations many times. The White Eagle over by the Fremont Bridge on the east side. Yeah. They play there, I think, monthly. So go nice. And check them out if you like what you heard. And even if you didn't, you should check them out. dear friend Scott Prose is here to talk with us about his experiences of simplifying the good life. Scott is somebody who I lived with for a year and or so, and over that time got to see how he just exhibited some opinions and convictions and embodied those in a way that I really hadn't seen other people do, a very sort of Wendell Berry-minded thing. I kept on bothering you to read Wendell Berry, but you...
And I did. And I mean, after I moved out.
How's that working out for you?
That's good. Okay. I love the essays particularly.
Yeah, he's a sharp cat.
And you need to say that we lived 3 feet from each other.
Yeah,
actually.
No kidding.
Like,
yeah,
we had, I don't know. Nightly chats. I don't know what you would compare those to, but I really enjoy
pillow
those.
Talk from separate beds.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, you have to be very careful how you describe that.
Let's scratch that.
The separate beds is a good start.
So not that there's anything wrong with that.
Of course not. It's just a lot of people's minds go in different places pretty quickly.
Yeah, well, that's grow true. Up, would you?
Have you been a bad woman or something?
Thank you.
No, sorry, that was the wrong button.
Hitchcock, it's okay. Yeah. Scott was really great at, one example would be writing letters to people and, using a typewriter often for that and cutting out little pictures from magazines that you thought were quite cute and using creative forms of ink and such to, just specialize and particularize everything that you would send out to people. Which is really rare. Like, we have so much immediate access to communication. Like, I can text message, I can send an email, I can send a picture of what's in front of me, a live video from my phone. It's so cool. But, like, this thing, I got impatient. Like, I'm too ADD and impatient to do that sort of thing, but I found it beautiful. How did you get into that sort of stuff? Talk.
That's a great question. I guess I had some friends that were artists, and I didn't know what to do that was art or expression, I guess. And I didn't really, when I was younger, I lived kind of on a ranch, and there was kind of a community church nearby.
Sure.
And it kind of was, I met a lot of my friends there, I guess, besides that in school. And, I guess I'm making this story longer than it needs to be, but it's kind of, I realized I liked getting things in the mail. Like, I had a friend that sent me something, because he had moved. He moved when I was in fifth grade, and he sent me this card or whatever. And it was just a cool letter. And I was like, oh, that's really neat, actually. And we remained pen pals for a time. And, I started... writing letters occasionally or whatever, but it kind of picked up in college. Actually, I became this strange thing, but I became friends with some older women, and
nice.
They were around 80 or so, and one particular lady,
much older,
and we were just good friends. Most of them were widows, and we would kind of hang out and very Leave It to Beaver esque in a way. I would sit on their porch
Harold
and drink lemonade.
Yeah,
oh yeah, a cross between the two. I don't know, but very kind of. Classic picture there, but
that'd be fascinating though, because you get all kinds of perspective on life that most of us are not privy to.
Yeah, I mean, it's another topic, but I feel like I learned a lot about women that way. 80 something year old women can teach a young man quite a bit about women. Like, I mean, because I don't know, it's just I encourage it. You know,
well, they've seen everything that men have to try, and they know exactly what works and what doesn't.
Yeah, and they're gentle, and you know, yeah. I don't know. It's a great relationship to have if you ever have the opportunity. But in college, I started writing them letters, and I realized that I didn't stick too much art in them, but or put too much, I guess, images, I should say. But I did just wanted to communicate something to them that they were loved, and I realized like for them, texture was really important. Especially for older generations, there's just something like people have different ways of feeling loved. Like, you know, like there's physical communication, there's, you know, verbal communication, there's, I don't know, even environment as a communication, like an architecture of a building or something.
Sure.
But, I just felt like saying something to these women who meant a lot to me. There are a couple of them, primarily one though, and just writing them a letter like meant a lot to them. And when I would come home from college and see them occasionally, they would let me know it. And those relationships kind of, you know, continued on until most of them passed away, actually. But it kind of opened up a desire to kind of explore that, to explore what texture was in sending it to people and what art could be. Like I said, I had a lot of friends who were doing a lot of artwork around me, but I didn't know how to relate to it. I didn't know like how to engage it in a way, and I struggled with that a little. So I started to certain friends who I thought might be interested a little, and close friends, I would send them letters because I had a lot of friends that lived far away. But I would start doing things to them. I learned like different techniques of like transferring images onto letters and. I don't know, when I would date girls, I found it was like really effective. Like there's another way to communicate with them, but
It shows that you've got many dimensions to your personality.
I guess. Yeah.
There's something I want to say to you that doesn't use words.
It might take a picture. It might take 1,000 words.
It's true. And,
just out of curiosity, you had mentioned transferring images. Are you talking about cutting and pasting or?
No, there's at most art stores, there's a thing called a Xylon pin. And like if you do a Xerox copy of any photograph you have, it's a reverse image, but you flip the photocopy over and you put the Xylon pin and it releases the ink.
That's fascinating.
Xylon pen. Can you spell that for anybody interested?
X-Y-L-O-N?
It sounds like
it's an X, not a Z. That's what I wanted to know.
Yeah, I think it's an X anyway.
It sounds like something you'd have like on a Battlestar Galactica sort of thing.
Yeah, and it is a weird chemical. It smells horrible. Yeah.
Xylon frigates.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyways, it reveals different dimensions. You did it with old ladies, and then you... that's terrible. Why did I say that? You wrote letters. You wrote letters to old ladies, and then you wrote letters to your friends, and you wrote letters to girls, and what other kinds of communication did you experiment with?
It evolved in me doing more art in the letters, and I actually realized there's a large history of this in the United States. It's kind of a forgotten thing, but letter writing was a primary way of communication at one point, but a lot of artwork, American artwork, is captured in this because it's personal. Like people inspire you to do work, so you make it for them. You have a want for them. You have a want to communicate with them, and it's actually kind of a strange thing in a way. Art is so like unrelatable, but when someone sends you it, even if you might not look at this photograph or you might not look at this picture ever, but if it's sent to you and it has your address on it in the mail, you're going to look at it, whether, you know, and so, you know, that was kind of a problem sometimes, like girls would look into things too much.
Like, like there's too much subtext?
Yeah, a little too much, you know, looking into
too much texture.
Yeah, that's right. Just is too much.
You couldn't stand corduroy.
Yeah. But I just think, you know, I would encourage people out there I think there's a lot of mediums out there that when they become personalized, they're really meaningful. You may not be the best musician or the best, you know, painter or whatever, but when you do it for someone, it really you know, has a meaning, especially if you have a message. If you have a message of love, or you like want to, you know, give advice or something, it's a great way to deliver that.
Yeah,
so,
for sure. And I'm an archivist, and my wife, before we got married and when we were dating, she would do like collages and stuff, and they were awesome. And I think she made this thing. It was like just a Valentine's Day, like, you know, here's a thing, I like you. And I still have it. Like, I have it like tucked away in a box because, you know, she made it and then she gave it to me, and I knew that was intended for me. And it had a record player like on the front or the back or, you know, some part of it. And that made a huge impression. So yeah, it's a meaningful artifact. It's something that communicates. Like, you can pull that out of a box someday when you yourself are 80 years old, and that'll be the thing that, like, rekindles all the passion or like all the feelings coming back.
Yeah.
Well, and it, you know, I think of things I've cherished, and it's tactile, it's physical, real things. Whereas, like, you know, let's say, like, yeah, after a breakup, like going through your inbox on Gmail and checking all the boxes and then clicking delete. Are you sure?
Yeah, there's no catharsis to that.
Yeah, like, well, yeah, there is just a sense of relief. I can't ritualize that because I'm so used to clicking delete.
Right.
And I'm not holding on to something. Like, but after a particularly rough breakup, it took a full, like, about a year afterwards before I realized, oh, hey, crud, I didn't realize I still had all these love letters and pictures of us together. And I had to – I couldn't just throw them away and, you know, set a little fire in the fireplace and toss them in there. And it was like,
yeah,
such a releasing experience to, like, seriously, hold these things that I had held that were real and had her handwriting and sent on, and they're burning and they're gone.
Right.
And,
right.
But it was such a freeing and releasing thing.
Yeah.
That, like, because it meant so much more than like a love email or a cute little text message. You know, I've lost a phone and lost the text messages that are saved on the local, what have you,
in the cloud.
La-di-da.
Yeah.
But like these real things, like you're appealing to something that, like, virtuality for all its convenience ultimately can't accomplish.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it is difficult to feel. I don't know.
I guess
to feel, really. Yeah, I mean, to just, it, like, often technology communicates very well, but it communicates only in one area.
Like in a certain tone, and that's it.
Yeah, and I feel like, you know, it would kind of like be going to, I don't know, seeing live music for some people is a big deal. Like, mm-hmm. Or, you know, the venue kind of helps
totally.
The music in a way. Like, it helps you experience it. Like, you can still say the same words, but then there's something added to it.
Right.
That, it just helps. Like, I think there's this chemical company, DuPont or whatever, and they had this ad campaign for a long time, and they say, like, we don't make what you use, we just make it better. and I feel like, you know, you can write a letter, and, like, the same thing can be said in an email, but, like, the texture will make what you say potentially better.
Sure.
And it's not always understood how that works, and I kind of like the mystery of that. But
it seems like there's almost a thing where you, like if you want to stand above the noise, like, people have been trying to figure out how to do that with advertising for years, and, like, hitting you in a place where you're not expecting that. It seems like that carries more weight. Like if you're already going through your email box and you typically get more of your, like, communication from your friends in your email or from your text messages or whatever, and then you go to the mailbox in a totally separate part of your life and you open it up, and that's where you're expecting all the ads, and you get, like, a card from somebody. That's where, like, it really sticks out, and that's, like, the one thing that you remember from the mail.
When
that's
there are, like,
all
yeah.
kinds of stuff in
and
the
you
email
forget to throw it away, and maybe
away.
It just stays on your yeah.
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 Yeah. And it's strange, though. Like, I, you know, bless the people that have given me Christmas cards this year, but, like, I've had people give me lots of Christmas cards, you
sure.
know, and I appreciate them in a way, but they don't really say anything inside.
Like Hallmark things.
Yeah, so it's like...
Right.
Not nothing personal.
Yeah, exactly. Like, there are these images, and they just say Merry Christmas, or they say Happy Holidays, and there's a name. And it's like, it works the other way around. Like, if I'm going to pay attention to the image... Like, I need some personalization, like...
Some relational quality to
I'd
it.
Rather have
yeah.
the $4 that it costs to buy the
Yeah, exactly,
thing.
Yeah.
Like, seriously, don't give it to those bastards printing it on $4.
Yeah, yeah.
Woo!
I definitely agree.
That is a racket. Sorry.
But, yeah.
People are crazy.
I just think that, you know, and it doesn't need to be necessary letters. It's just, it's a more intensive form of communication, and I think intrinsically people can usually identify that. Sometimes it means nothing to people. Like, I have a friend who just, like, gifts just don't touch him, you know, like, and that's okay, you know, it's, I think there are many forms of communication because there are many different kinds of people, you know, and it's a way of learning how to communicate with them. But I've personally found that this is a way to, you know, it helped me endear the heart of my wife. It helped me, you know, like, gain friendships and gain, you know, give things to people that were meaningful that I know that they will remember. So, you know, people are like, are you an artist? And it's like, no, I wouldn't say I'm an artist, but I know I do create art occasionally. Right. And it's art because it's purposeful. It's enjoyed. It communicates. And I know these people keep it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
You know, like, if you have some, like, art showing and, like, you just put this art up, like, it might be kept and people might appreciate it, but there's no guarantee, really. And I feel like if you can communicate certain things in certain relationships, like, that kind of secures art in a way. It secures it as being useful and in some sense beautiful, I guess. I don't know.
It's beautiful not just as a static, like, thing I can look at and go, ooh, aha, Monet did a great job on that one. But, like, because it carries this story in this relationship, it's not beauty. Its beauty lies not simply in its own fixed place, but, like, it exists between me and it, and me and this other person. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's a much bigger deal there. Like, the beauty flows.
Yeah, and I think those, I don't know, I'd like to think those, like, $4 crappy Christmas cards are an attempt. But I sometimes think it would be...
Caricature.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel it's such a failure. It would just be better on most people.
Yeah.
Like, some, you know what I mean? If somebody tries something, it's like if they give you a car, but the car, like, won't work and it costs more to fix the car than, like, to get it running. It's like,
I just
I wish this would have never happened or something. Cause, like, I really just don't know how to feel. It's like, you sent me a car that I know you send everyone else and it just has your name on the bottom. And I really appreciate that they thought of me, but it's like a text message can even do that.
Yeah. You know, a Facebook, so, happy birthday.
Yeah. I mean, it's just like,
oh god, we could do a episode on that.
Oh gosh, like, people you don't even know, like, yeah, give you Facebook happy birthdays. Gosh,
do you find, Scott, that does your writing style change between, like, when you're typing something out on an electronic keyboard and when you're, like, writing something or typing on your typewriter? Or
maybe a little, actually. It does change a tad. To be honest, I'm a horrible writer. Like, that's something...
I don't, like, believe that for a minute.
No. I mean, like, just ask any professor I had in college. But,
okay, well, technically, then, maybe.
Yes, I'd rather ask the 80-year-old. I'm a veteran, so.
You might be a little biased, but...
Yeah, well, see, it's good.
I think... I like writing by hand or by typewriter just because, I mean, you can make mistakes in it. And you kind of have to think about what you're saying a little more.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, I have written letters even, like, on a computer or whatever, especially, like, love letters that I wanted to make sure said the exact thing, like, had to correct them. But so then I'd, like, transfer them to a typewriter or whatever. Yeah, but
With the xylograph.
Yeah, you can also do that.
Argon or whatever.
Yeah, some crazy chemical. But
okay. Yeah. Well, that's cool. I was just thinking about one of the other things that's nice about when you make something, like, if you're typing it, typewriters are cool. They have the kind of the retro kitsch factor as well. But I used to be a Polaroid artist, and I don't have a Polaroid camera anymore. I think the last one I had broke, and I haven't replaced it. Yeah. But I love the idea.
No more film.
I heard that they started making it. Polaroid is done, but maybe there's another company. Were you telling me about that, Brennan?
No.
Okay. It must have been somebody else.
Okay.
But
we got to look into that.
Seriously.
Okay.
I love the idea that you could make something and there would only be one of it. Like,
yeah,
you know, like, this isn't something that you can mass produce. You can't have multiple of these, you know, like, going from one inbox to another. You can't forward a physical letter unless you go down and photocopy it, and then it's still not the same as the original. So... I love that idea, just that you're giving somebody something that's completely and totally unique.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, now that I think about it, I think I am honest with people when I write things, or, like, I don't know, like, emails, I associate them with work or office jobs where, like, I'm more politically correct.
Right.
But and I mean that in a good way. Sometimes we're politically correct in kind of, like, not fully loving people in a way. Not fully, like, when you really care, you just kind of, like, you gloss it over and with political correctness or whatever. Right. But like, there are just times when you're writing a letter, and I feel like people are almost more forgiving in a way, and they're more receptive. It's like, I've said some kind of crazy things actually over a letter before, and it's amazing how I feel like I think it changed the way it was received almost, yeah. And that, you know, maybe the texture, I don't know what it is, but they're like, okay, this is okay that he said this, you know, and yeah. I feel more comfortable saying something kind of intense in a letter than I do on an email. I don't
sure,
know.
Yeah. Well, it's probably, once again, like the venue you're receiving it in maybe has a lot to do with how much you can put into that.
Yeah, no, that's yeah. a good point.
You can't shoot bullets with a slingshot.
Yeah, well, that's
or
very
alternatively,
true.
you can't sure. You can't drop food to impoverished nations with a paper airplane.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
It's not going where I thought it
was. How's that beer going, Brock? It's about that time of the episode where we check in. We thank Scott for being here.
True.
We check in on our beverages.
Yeah.
Work.
Well, hey, the Ebenezer is fantastic. It was really foamy when I had it, but that didn't detract from
said.
It didn't detract from the whole the experience in total. I really appreciate it. It's got spicy Christmas flavor. So that's the sort of thing that I appreciate about this time of year. How was the cider?
Delicious.
Yeah, very pleasant.
Nice. Yeah, there was no depiction of how much alcohol was in that, but what would you say if you had to guess?
Maybe about a 7.5,
okay.
Possibly an 8.
Yeah.
And between on the dry, sweet, you know, scale yeah. for cider, I would say it's a little, I don't know, a little towards the sweet, but it has some fruity tones to it.
It really reminds me of a Chardonnay.
Nice.
Yeah, and pleasantly so.
Yeah,
actually.
But yeah, I was going to
say,
that like,
could be negative.
And I usually use that disparagingly because
right.
I hate Chardonnays, like a Merlot. But it was good. So good job, Mark and Mick Parrish.
Yeah. Well, we've come to the time where we close everything out, so I'll give you the closing information here. Remember to find us on the internet at thesprocket.podbean.com. You can send us feedback about the program and suggestions for topics and or guests and or drinks. Send us via the email. The address is thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com. thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com. Or call and leave us a message, 503-847-9774. Once again, big thanks to Ryan J. Lane for providing our theme music opening and closing. Find him on the internet at myspace.com/RyanJLane. So, Brandon, happy Christmas. Scott, happy Christmas.
Thank you.
Merry Christmas, one and all. Welcome to
Indeed.
Earth, baby Jesus.
God bless us, everyone.
Goodbye.
Hey, yeah.
All right. We'll talk to you next time.
Yeah,
cheers.
See you next year.